this update from the Canadian Press. The cost to build the Trans Mountain Pipeline expansion has leapt by 70% from the last estimate 3 years ago. Ian Anderson, president and CEO of the company owned by the federal government, says the project is expected to cost $12.6 billion. Two groups of Canadian evacuees from Wuhan, China, may finally get a chance to rest after a stressful journey out of the epicenter of the novel coronavirus outbreak. Around 200 people who arrived in Canada today will be quarantined for the next 2 weeks at Canadian Forces Base Trenton, Ontario. An Ottawa sociology professor who has spent a decade fighting terrorism accusations is now suing the federal government over his extradition to France, where he was imprisoned for 3 years. The Transportation Safety Board says a fire continues to burn at the site of yesterday's train derailment in Saskatchewan. It says one investigator has arrived on the scene near Guernsey and another is on the way, but the fire is preventing them from accessing the site. From the Canadian Press, I'm Emily Dreveski.
Good God. Check out the Ohawk weather right now. For Saturday, -5. Chance of flurries, of course. For Sunday, -1. Flurries as well. Hey, Monday, if we're going to still hanging around for it, it's a mix of sun and cloud, a high of 1. Tonight, get down to a low of -11 with some more flurry action. Right now, downtown Hamilton, it's -4. With the wind chill, it feels like minus stupid. Hey, it's the 2 o'clock portion of Steel City Music, as heard on The Hawk. Your host, Gunner, here. Wonderful hour of music and Justine Fisher. Nice interview. She's a lot of fun, that one. And go check out her show that's happening at the Scene Hollywood on Saturday. And if it's this Friday, and if all the things line up correctly, which they should, with Cobalt Connect, Jeremy Freiberger should be sitting across from me right now.
I am.
This is nice. It's good.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
I am. You're keener. You show up at like 1:30.
When it's festival season, I have I get up in the morning or before I go to bed, I make a laundry list of the stuff I got to do, and like radio show was on the list, so I wouldn't forget that I have one.
Right.
Which is a good thing to be here. But then I just start like making my way down the list, and if it gets to the next thing, I just go to that spot and wait for that thing to happen, because if I think like, oh, I got 20 minutes, I'll tack on some other task.
Don't do that.
Then I'm late for this.
You're late for doing this.
Yeah. So I just here and I wait.
I messaged you a couple days ago, you and Lisa. I said, listen, you guys are both really busy. Winterfest is like all consuming.
Yeah.
You don't have to do this.
Like, I know,
a little
but
time.
We like
but no,
doing.
That's good. That's good. You know, because you're the responsible one. You know when to be on time, Jeremy Freiberger.
Ooh. Oh. Wow. He's throwing a little shade there.
I just teased. I haven't seen her. That's all.
Yeah. That's true.
A little jokey.
I think
you
hit her button and then it went off.
No. That's just the light. Look, see, you tap it.
Oh, it's tricky.
There you go. How are we doing over there, Lise?
Good.
Okay. All right. We have a guest. Are we going to interview your guest first? Or are we doing the Cobalt Connect stuff right at the top?
Oh, man, for a little bit, just so that you can get settled, and then.
All right, then.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right.
Okay, so a lot of events happened. Last Friday, I had Pat on.
You had a hat on?
I had Pat.
Oh, you had Pat on.
I had Pat.
You probably had a hat on, too.
Yes, I did. Mr. Coppolino, the host of the Tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had him, and he was a lot of fun, and earlier I had Gavin Stevens on.
And now they both know where the event's being.
They both know where the event's.
Thanks to the power of radio.
That was a little cringy. As someone who does radio and media, my promoter hat was kind of getting a little upset as I was talking. Like, because, and then you, when you came in, you said, "Ooh, I don't know about that. I really wish they would have." You know, I was like, antsy.
You said it's comedians doing interviews, so if we give them a little cheese nugget of something weird, they're going to run with that and not get back to the core
they're
details. That's our job.
Yeah, our job is to promote and give out the details. But I'm like, but even I was like going, do you not know where you're going?
And like, he knows now.
Well, yeah. Pat looked at me and went, well, I don't know. I looked at the ad and I kind of thought it was at my club. I was like, no, Pat.
But you know, you booked other people at your club, Pat.
And he's so funny, right? And Gavin was like, oh, yeah, I know these people. They're really good. Where am I going again? I'm like, you're going to Discovery Lane. You're on Winterfest. He goes, oh, yeah, okay. Do I dress up? I'm like, well, you don't. Show up as Bonhomme.
Right.
You know.
You and Chimo can have it out.
Just have it out.
Yeah.
The show was benum. Go do your shtick that
what
way.
What happens if two snowman mascots show up at the same event?
I don't know. I didn't hire them, so I have nothing to do with any of this.
People are going to think they showed up at some sort of Frozen party.
Oh, that's nice. You guys doing? You must have done some Frozen stuff this year.
No.
Stayed away from it?
Stayed away from it, yeah.
Okay.
I'm a dad, and I have a 7-year-old son, and he, when he was much younger, super into Frozen,
right.
Like wearing a crown,
yeah.
Walking around with a dress on and stuff,
yeah.
In the backyard playing,
yeah.
Elsa.
Loved it, yeah.
If he ever hears that I just said this on the radio,
oh, don't worry.
I will be stabbed in the night.
Hey,
I think.
Don't worry about it. Like, we
were
calling
now
everything.
It's like Frozen, Frozen never existed.
Existed to that poor boy. Well, Miles, don't worry about it. Old Jimbo has a recording, and I'll plop that at your 16th birthday.
There you go.
There you go.
Show up at his wedding and.
There you go. Remember this? No,
yeah.
You don't, because this is what
I
kind of person
I got photo evidence,
dad is.
Video evidence, yeah. Of all of these things.
So you're in the midst of doing all this. What's the...
We are, yeah. We're in weekend number 2. Last weekend was Frostbites and a whole pile of other community events. It was fantastic. I love Frostbites, so it was great to be like a partner presenter,
yep.
With them. And then this weekend is just like ram-packed. Like there are 3 story times going on right this moment.
Yeah.
At libraries across the city. Toddler story time and all sorts of other story times, which is awesome. The library does so many events. The Japanese Film Festival, I believe, opens this weekend at one of the libraries. There's early morning risers. This weekend is also the North Central Keith Hub Pancake Breakfast.
Oh, cool.
They've been doing it for like 40-some-odd years or whatever. The 2 guys, Jerry and Mike, that are on our committee are awesome. They're like,
nice.
They're just like, they're the, and I don't mean this in a negative way in any way. I hope they would never take it that way. They're like the old-timer neighborhood organizer guys, you know, like they're in their 60s or whatever. Maybe,
yeah.
Older, and they just do stuff for their neighbors. Like, it's not about, like, I'm not a producer or whatever. It's none of that. It's just,
yeah.
Like, we like having pancakes. Let's do that. And we're like, yeah.
I need more people to
do
live
more.
In my life.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Yeah.
So there's tons of that stuff. And then at the Hub this weekend, which is down at the Waterfront Trust, tonight we've got Graham Chittenden, Gavin Stevens, Amy Bug.
The big comedy night.
The big comedy night, which I was like terrified about doing because I don't know anything about booking comedy, but Patrick came on and booked us the right people.
And sponsored from Levity, yeah.
And sponsored from Levity, and then we've got like OLG and Elements are our stage sponsor, our venue sponsor. Mars Homes is the stage sponsor, so lots of great people coming in to sort of back that night up, and now we're over 100 tickets pre-sold. We've probably only got 20 left or whatever.
That's good.
Which is fantastic. So I'm,
yeah.
Thrilled that a comedy night is flying as part of Winterfest. And then Saturday night is Glass Eyelashes, DJ Smooth Transitions, and Owen Pallett, and that's moving really well too, and I'm super excited to present Owen. I've just loved his music for,
right.
As long as I can remember. So thrilled to have him in. And then on the weekend, it's The Flea, which is run by Whitney and Erica McMeekin,
yeah.
Craft thing, but like they do like really awesome, like Lisa, like really awesome, truly curated craft events, and there's like a kid zone and a snowmobile you can get your picture taken on in like 80s retro snowmobile gear, all sorts of silly stuff, free cotton candy, free hot chocolate.
The
right.
Vendors
lots of
are
stuff.
Amazing.
Are they?
So,
I've been watching,
yeah.
Them. Like,
I've been
watching
looking
the
at
post,
the vendors,
but.
And I'm like, oh, those are great, great
sweet.
Vendors. So
sweet.
Check it out.
Yeah. 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 So I'm excited about that. And then Friendship Friday on Barton Street. That's tonight. And that's their big Winterfest event down there. So, yeah, there's tons of stuff, which is great.
And anyone who's just tuning in right now, we're talking about Winterfest, what's been happening this week and what's coming up in just a little bit. Where do we go? Where's the definitive place to go to find out all the information?
HamiltonWinterfest.ca. So you can go on there, and that's got every single event in Winterfest listed with their own pages.
Links, yeah.
You can look at whether it's a signature event or a community event or a library event or free skating. There's free skating at arenas all over the place and free skating at the waterfront every night. And I'm shocked. Like, I've been spending way too much time at the Waterfront Trust. You know, like, I just, if they could build me a little room with a cot,
yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah.
But there are people.
Jeremy's room?
Yeah. There are people skating there at like 8 in the morning till 2 in the morning. Like,
yeah.
I leave at some ungodly hour and it's like, what are you all doing here? 30 more dudes show up out of their pickup trucks and go play hockey for an hour. Or a gaggle of people show up and they're doing figure skating. It's like, there are people skating all the time.
Well, I'm happy that the weather,
yeah,
is like,
I didn't know there was such a scene for that.
We clearly are not skaters.
No.
But there's maybe a whole skater world that we
there
don't
is.
Know.
There is.
Yeah.
But they're at the waterfront.
Everyone always used to love to get outdoors and do stuff like that in the wintertime.
Yeah.
That's why Winterfest exists, because we don't want to be stuck in the house constantly getting upset, looking at Facebook.
Feeling like the people on that Corona boat, coronavirus boat.
Oh my gosh.
People like stuck in a little cruise boat with no windows.
Yeah.
That's, don't do that. Get outside and do Winterfest and forget that that's all happening for
a little bit. Actually, I know you're joking, but that's a great idea because this is what it's about. It's about getting rid of the blahs, that sort of stuff, participating, meeting some people within your neighborhood, within your community, learning about a couple things, maybe even buying something, finding out some extra thing on artwork, that sort of thing.
You can't go to the flea and not buy something.
Yeah, so it's actually working out really well. I was scared, and I told him this a couple weeks ago. This is why I was scared, because we weren't getting winter.
Right.
Oh, when you say Winterfest, I think, well, then there'll be just blankets of white snow, and then everyone will be sleighs going everywhere. That's winter to me.
Change it to Sludge Fest.
Sludge Fest for a while there.
Sludge.
I'm all about greenery. I love greenery, but if you're putting on a festival and it's called Winterfest, it's going to be winter.
But so guys, good news. Look what happened.
Yeah, we got a little dusting.
That's my whole thing. And then I was a little bit concerned, like, well, what if we get Snowmageddon? Because the media always goes, Snowmageddon. It's never Snowmageddon.
Oh, I love Snowmageddons. They make me feel like I should just stay inside all day long.
Just not on nights when I have concert tickets sold. Yeah. not on concert nights.
That was the whole point. Yeah,
the night before concert night.
Totally.
Snowmageddon, stay inside. And then the next day go, I feel cabin fever. Yeah. I think I'm going to put on my gear.
I've never watched an aerial performance done at Discovery Center. I'm going to go do that. I'm going to go see the comedians. I'm going to go see Owen Pallett. I'm going to go to the flea market. I'm going to get out because it's cold, but it's nice out as well. But that's the whole thing. You start building these memories about Hamilton, and they stick with you.
Yeah. Right?
So that's what you're supposed to be doing.
Hats and mitts. That's it.
Yeah.
That's what you need. Yeah. You need hats and mitts.
Maybe a jaunty scarf.
Yeah, and a jaunty scarf.
when my wife and I were courting each other many, many moons ago, I knew she was into knitting. And so I attempted to knit something for her.
Uh-oh.
It was supposed to be a hat.
Oh.
It became like a little cozy that she could put in her pocket.
Cozy?
You know, like about a hat maybe for an infant.
He's so crafty.
Oh, I see.
He's so crafty.
And then she made me a really beautiful scarf that I still wear to this day. So
I know that scarf of yours. Okay.
I couldn't make my wife. If I made my wife anything, I'd be single. I'd be so single.
Kim accepts me for who I my knitting is.
My wife accepts me for my knitting.
Yeah, yeah. I get that.
My wife accepts me for only what I can do properly.
You mix those two things together, guys. It's a good marriage.
Yeah, there you go.
It's fine.
Okay.
We have a guest.
Yes, we do. Let's get to our guest.
We do. I'm so excited to welcome Amanda LeDuc, who is a Hamilton author.
Yeah.
She has just launched her latest book called Disfigured on fairy tales, disability, and making space. Fairy tales shape how we see the world. So what happens when you identify more with the beast than beauty? If every disabled character is mocked and mistreated, how does the beast ever imagine a happily ever after? Amanda LeDuc looks at fairy tales from the Brothers Grimm to Disney, showing us how they influence our expectation and behavior and linking the quest for disability rights to new kinds of stories that celebrate difference. A bit about Amanda. Amanda LeDuc's essays and stories have appeared in publications across Canada, the U.S., and the U.K. She's the author of the novels The Miracles of Ordinary Men and the forthcoming The Centaur's Wife. She has cerebral palsy and lives in Hamilton, Ontario, where she works as the communications coordinator for the Festival of Literary Diversity, FOLD, Canada's first festival for diverse authors and stories. Amanda LeDuc, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. Congratulations on this.
Oh, thanks so much, Lisa.
Well, I saw the video of you picking out, like, the publisher, Coach House Books.
Yeah.
They actually have this giant machine that binds the books, right?
Yeah, so Coach House has actual printing machines in their place of residence.
Cool.
So they acquire the books and then print them all, and it's kind of a one-stop shop. And one of the things that they're well known for amongst their authors is once your book is ready and printed, you get invited down to be there when the first book comes off of the binding machine. So I got to actually pick it off the binding machine and cut it myself, and it was very cool.
It was pretty great, and I remember watching that video and just being look, it's Amanda's book! It was like a baby moment. Like,
I felt the same way. Yes,
yeah.
Can confirm.
Amazing. So tell us about what your book is about and what inspired you to write this book.
Great. So I'm a disabled woman. I have cerebral palsy, which for me manifests in a limp and a very sort of distinctive gait when I walk around. And I don't have great balance, so it influences me in terms of like walking on snow sidewalks, for example, that aren't cleared of snow and things like that. And it was something that I didn't really focus on when I was younger. I tried to pretend that I wasn't disabled, that I walked just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. And then as I got older, I got introduced to the disability community and learned that disability was actually something that I could take pride in and has shaped my life in a very particular way. And about a year, 2 years ago, I was away on a writing retreat and I was walking in the forest. And it just sort of struck me all of a sudden how there's this real connection between fairy tales and the forest. You know, we think of Hansel and Gretel going mm-hmm. off into yep. their into the woods and finding that Little Red Riding Hood. Yeah. Exactly. But we don't often think about the forest as a place where disabled people can be, especially those with mobility difficulties, because it can be difficult to walk around.
Yeah.
But as I was thinking that, I suddenly realized that actually you have a lot of disabled characters in fairy tales already, but we never think about them as disabled characters. We think about them as villains. So, for example, in Hansel and Gretel, in one of the versions, the witch who meets them in the forest comes to the door with a crutch, and she has a crutch because she wants to deceive them into thinking that she's this poor old woman that they need to take care of, when meanwhile she's trying to lure them into her house to eat them, as the witch does.
Yes.
And then you look at things like Beauty and the Beast, for example. The Beast is, you know, this prince who is originally very handsome, and then he meets a fairy who curses him with ugliness because she says that he's ugly on the inside, so he needs to manifest that ugliness in his physical appearance until he can meet someone who falls in love with him, and then he gets to be beautiful at the end. So as soon as he's learned his lesson, he goes back to being beautiful or able-bodied or whatever the case may be. And even though we look at fairy tales and we think, oh, well, these are just stories that we tell to kids, they don't really matter, they actually do matter a lot, because they set up very prescribed patterns of behavior for what we expect from people in the world. So especially when you look at something like the facial difference or the facial disfigurement community, we are taught from a very young age that if you look different from the rest of the population, you're somebody to be avoided. And that has a real impact on how people with facial differences or people with other disabilities actually live their lives out in the world, because it means that people are being taught that disability is something that you either ignore and pretend it's not there, or it's something that you just sort of stay away from because it's something that can almost infect you and you don't want to catch it.
Yeah.
So there's this real theme in fairy tales, and it's very subconscious. But there's this real theme that, you know, disability is something to be avoided and something we don't want to talk about. And I really wanted to explore that in the book and look at how we can imagine new fairy tales and new ways of telling stories that, you know, don't just include disability but also celebrate it. Because the thing about being disabled in the world is that my life has taught me a very particular way of viewing things, and it has given me very particular insights, which are actually quite valuable. Like, as someone who has a physical a disability and, you know, mobility issues, I can say something like, hey, well, it's really important for people to clear their sidewalks, because if you don't, you know, people will fall and hurt themselves. It's not just laziness.
Yeah.
Here is the perspective. You know, this is, it's really important, especially if we're looking at building a society that's inclusive and, you know, cares about all of its citizens. We have to stop thinking about disability as this thing that's kind of an afterthought and start thinking about it from the ground up. And that ground up starts in things like fairy tales and the stories that we tell our kids.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're known for writing, you've written novels, right?
Weird novels, yes.
Weird. Perfect. My favorite kind. And so it's just an interesting, was there a difference in writing from a fiction novel to a nonfiction novel, or was the process very similar, or how did you find that sort of going around that creation process?
Well, writing nonfiction actually, even though I started out writing fiction and writing novels and short stories, writing nonfiction has actually felt like more of a spiritual home in a sense. I think because, you know, when I look back on it now, like my first novel, the reason it's weird is because it's a man who grows wings and sort of turns into an angel. But I can look back on that now. You know, I published that novel 7 years ago, and looking back at it from the perspective of someone working in disability rights, and there's this real fascination, and has been a real fascination in my work for a long time, with the different body and the othered body and sort of human-animal hybrids and what it means when something is different and how we look at that thing that's different. So that's a theme that has always kind of wanted to come out in my fiction. So when I was writing nonfiction and it was explicitly about that, wanting to have a different or having a different body and wanting that different body to be accepted in the world, it came really easily. I was worried about the research aspect of it initially, partly because I did a degree in creative writing, and what that meant was I spent my whole university career and maybe went to the library 4 times. Because I was, you know, making stories up. That was sort of my main university focus. Yeah. And so I had this idea in my head of research as being this thing where you would go to the library and, you know, you're looking through dusty microfiche and all these kinds of things. And I was like, I don't know if I can do that. But what I, of course, forgot was that the internet is the world's library. And with the disability community, especially with Disfigured, the book that's out now, there are a lot of first-hand interviews with people from the disability community in there. And the internet and the internet's tools, you know, using social media, using things like Skype to host interviews, was actually very, very easy and really enjoyable. I didn't find the research aspect of the book boring at all. It was like just finding a whole bunch of different rabbit holes and going down them. So it was really exciting and really encouraging. And I made a lot of really great connections in the disability community and in the wider writing community, too. So it was great. You know, I really liked writing a nonfiction book, and I look forward to writing another one, hopefully, at some point in the future.
Well, we do too. That sounds great. So you talk about rewriting fairy tales or writing new fairy tales. Can we write new fairy tales?
I think we can. And I
what
think
does that look like?
I don't. That is a good question, and I don't know if I have a good answer for it.
I'm sure you do.
I mean, I think. I love fairy tales, and I didn't write this book as someone who was trying to debunk them or say that they're not things we should be looking at or telling anymore. But I think the important thing to consider when we rewrite fairy tales is to look at how fairy tales have a very particular social expectation and set very particular ways of viewing the world.
Yeah.
So the object is not to, you know, retell these stories in a way that's similar to the way they were told before. It's about retelling them in ways that cast new light on things. So, you know, what does it mean to, for example, write a fairy tale about a princess who is in a wheelchair? How do you then reorganize the world of that fairy tale to accommodate the wheelchair? One of the things that we talked about, I launched the book in Toronto a couple of nights ago, and my moderator for the session was the disability awareness consultant Andrew Gerza, who lives in Toronto, and he has cerebral palsy himself and uses a power wheelchair, and he talks a lot about how it would be really meaningful for him to see a prince or a princess in a fairy tale that's in a power wheelchair specifically, because someone who uses a power wheelchair is someone who maybe can't necessarily propel the wheelchair by themselves, right? Yeah. And that's a very different experience than someone who has a wheelchair that they can propel on their own. So the importance in reimagining fairy tales and revisioning them is putting disability front and center in these stories, that makes it something that isn't just, you know, a villain that you vanquish, or, you know, like the Beast, where you learn to be a better person and then your disability goes away. Right. What if we wrote a story about Beauty and the Beast where, you know, they fall in love and the Beast's appearance doesn't change at the end of the story? What does that say for society? What does that say for, you know, Beauty, who falls in love with this person, and our larger ideals about what it means to fall in love in the first place and to be attracted? And, like, I want stories that kind of blow open all of these questions and just make people think differently about things.
As a parent, I want that in kids' literature.
Totally.
You know, like,
totally.
It's the world of, like, I work at a bookstore and I have been working with kids' books for a million years, and I'm forever putting books down going, yeah, no, I'm not interested in the girl being perfect and only one. She's like, I'm ugly.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I'm pretty.
A damsel in distress.
Yeah, you know,
and that the redemption moment at the end is always having to go to like a standardized definition of what beauty is or whatever.
Yes.
That the redemption moment can't be
something different. Yeah, you know, it is changing. Yeah. It is changing bit by bit, but, you know, I look, and I'm looking at you, Amanda, right now, being like, write that book! Write those fairy tales, please!
Well, spoiler alert, okay. Maybe it's coming.
I even get the same thing when I'm doing, like, watching cartoons or reading with Miles, because the other day I can't remember what we were reading, but one of the characters that he really loves changed color and in the story and changed to a really dark color version of himself. And it's like, oh, when you turn dark, that's when you're bad. Mm-hmm. And it's that same thing, like light is good, dark
is
bad.
What does that say?
Exactly. You know, it's like challenging that kind of stuff that, like you say, like it's ingrained in him and he's 7, you know, and he's already picked up that dichotomy, you know, and it's like, how do we change that?
Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting when I was looking at, you know, like I was looking up reviews and I looked on Goodreads, and this one woman wrote a beautiful thing, and she said, you know, I'm not a person with a disability, but I am a plus-size woman, and in reading your book, I found myself in it. And I thought, that's amazing, because you really, you know, you appealed to this woman, and you made her see herself in your book. So, like, I love that. I'm curious, what are some of your favorite fairy tales?
Well, I'm definitely... growing up, was a lover of The Little Mermaid. The Disney version, not the Hans Christian Andersen version, because in the Hans Christian Andersen version, she kills herself at the end.
Oh,
and
I didn't
know that until I was a teenager. Yeah, spoiler. Sorry. I really liked The Little Mermaid. I liked Little Red Riding Hood. And I really liked Hansel and Gretel as well. Just the going into the forest and the cottage made of candy was very appealing, even though, you know, the witch tries to eat them. Just don't pay attention to that when you're a child. The Little Mermaid was sort of the big thing. My sister and I were growing up around the same time. The Disney film came out in 1989, and we had a swimming pool in the backyard, and we would constantly dive in our swimming pool and pretend to be Ariel. And that, I mean, as someone who has a slightly different, you know, way of being in the world and walking in the world, the fact that Ariel also had a different body was something that I didn't recognize at the time. But it's interesting to look back on it now, because we didn't pretend to be Ariel when she was walking, you know, when she was on land. We pretended to be her when she was in the water. So I think there's a real, you know, there's a real opportunity to talk to kids, especially about what it means to have a different body in the world, and to set that expectation up early on so that they understand that some people use wheelchairs, some people use canes, some people use walkers, and that's totally normal. So that as they get older, you know, kids are not thinking that disability is this sort of like weird thing that they don't know how to operate around.
Yeah.
I think it's really key to normalize these things, and just for people to understand that there's all kinds of different ways of being in the world.
You fear what you don't know.
Exactly.
So you see something, and as a child, you're like, explain this.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't explain it, then they're going to be afraid of that. And you just carry those attitudes for the rest of your life.
Yep.
And so I think it's great that you're writing that book.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think we should take a little music break.
Take
a little music break. And then I'd love to come back and learn more about Fold. I'd love to hear more about
it. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're going to play a little bit of Caribou from his new album, Suddenly, just came out this year. We're going to listen to You and I, Mr. Dan Snaith from Dundas, coming at you. We'll be right back. There you have it. That was not a new song from Caribou. That was a really old song from Caribou. You can tell I should not be in charge of pressing buttons.
Oh, stop it. I think you did a wonderful job.
I did a wonderful job playing Melody Day from Andorra, his 2007 release. He's got a great new album that you should listen to.
And we
that
will, was eventually.
That. Yeah, we'll get around to that.
Okay.
Yeah. We are back with Amanda LaDuke, and had a great first session chatting about your new book, but wanted to know more about FOLD, the Festival of Literary Diversity. Talk to us about that.
Yes, so the Festival of Literary Diversity is a literary festival that's based in Brampton, Ontario. We started, the first festival ran in 2016, and what FOLD does is it prioritizes storytellers who have been underrepresented and perhaps marginalized in Canadian literary culture. So the first festival in 2016 welcomed over 40 authors from a whole bunch of different communities. We had lots of authors of color, authors from the LGBT community, disabled authors, as well as other marginalizations as well. And the point of the festival is just to celebrate Canadian storytelling in all of its wonderful glory, but especially to give focus to those writers who maybe haven't gotten as much mainstream attention. And in so doing, to really call attention to the fact that Canadian publishing has had, you know, a real diversity problem, and really needs to do a lot of work on elevating those different kinds of stories. And it's important to do that because, like we were saying in the disability conversation, it's really important for young people and children especially to see and read stories that reflect them and reflect their own lives back to them. Because if they don't, otherwise they you know, grow up feeling like their stories aren't important. They feel like maybe they're not Canadian enough.
Sure.
And that's, you know, a stereotype and a myth that we really want to dispel. So we're going into our fifth year of operations. This coming festival at the beginning of May is our fifth anniversary festival. We'll be welcoming a whole bunch of wonderful authors and storytellers to Brampton for the Fold, and we're really looking forward to it.
That's fantastic. And what made it land in Brampton?
So the author, J.L. Richardson, she is a Brampton resident and author of the memoir The Stone Thrower, and the children's book, which was based on the memoir, The Stone Thrower. She is a Black Canadian writer, and she, when she published her novel in, or her memoir rather, in 2013, she visited a lot of literary festivals and noticed that the makeup skewed, you know, very, very white in many ways. And she started thinking about what a festival would look like that maybe prioritized different kinds of writers. And because she's in Brampton, she decided to set it there. And it actually has worked really well because it also calls attention to the fact that a lot of Canadian literary culture is very focused in the major cities, so like Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, and there's a very particular kind of mindset that comes with building a literary festival in that sort of space. So with Brampton, it's more of a suburban culture. So
extremely diverse community, from my experiences.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Brampton is a lovely, lovely city, and they're just, the city itself has been a huge supporter of the festival from
awesome.
Day one. They're really, really behind it. So we started with the first festival in 2016, and now we've expanded. So we have the May Festival, which happens the first weekend in May, and then we have a children's festival, which celebrates diverse children's storytellers, and that happens at the beginning of October. And then we have a monthly webinar series called Fold Academy, which brings acclaimed Canadian and international authors online to instruct writers in elements of craft and technique. Those happen once a month, and they're free for anybody to attend. And then we also have a reading series, which takes place in Brampton's Rose Theatre called Writers at the Rose. And there's actually a Writers at the Rose happening tonight with the acclaimed Toronto author and journalist Desmond Cole. So he's going to be in conversation there. So we've really sort of expanded the Fold's offerings beyond the May Festival into sort of a year-long, yearly opportunities and different things for writers to
Fantastic.
Do.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
As someone who grew up in Brampton, there was not a lot of offerings like that. Granted, 35 years ago.
35 years. Oh, Lisa, you mean 10. You mean a decade.
Oh, right. Sure. 8 years ago, there wasn't very many things in Brampton. But it's so, like, it just tickles me so, it makes me so happy that there is this, and I see things that are happening in Brampton that is just, like, so interesting and makes me want to go and visit that old city of mine. So, yeah.
Yes, you should come.
Yes, I should.
You should volunteer to be part of the festival.
Oh, man, I may do that.
There you go.
I may just do that. you are having a Hamilton book launch.
I am,
on
yes.
Wednesday, February 12th.
Yes, I am.
Anything that we should know about that?
Yes. So the launch is happening on Wednesday, February 12th, as you said, Lisa,
yeah.
from 7 to 9 p.m. It's taking place in the First Unitarian Church, which is located on Dundurn Street.
It's 170 Dundurn Street South.
Awesome.
Thank
space.
You.
You're yeah. welcome.
Great to come prepared.
Yeah.
I did not have the address for but what's great about the Unitarian Church, in addition to it being a beautiful venue, is it's also an accessible venue. So there is wheelchair-accessible parking, there's wheelchair-accessible entry and wheelchair-accessible washrooms, and it's also a scent-free and nut-free space for anybody who might want to come. And there's going to be a small interview with me about the process of writing the book with Sarah Jama, who works at the Hamilton Center for Civic Inclusion.
Yes.
And there will be books, and there will also be free food and drink, which may or may not be fairy tale inspired. So I would Yay. Recommend that anybody who wants to come, please do feel free to come and join in.
I just want to say I also love Sarah Jama.
She's wonderful.
I've finally met her in person a couple of times recently, and I love she just comes into some meetings and just like fearless ownership. Of her topics and her point
she
of view.
Gets her done.
I love it. I love it.
Great. Yeah. It's so good. I ask this of every person that I meet. So, what are your favorite books? What are you reading? What's on your shelf? They don't have to be your favorite books because that's too high pressure. But just recommend one fiction, one nonfiction, or two fiction, or two non. It doesn't really matter. Just give me two books.
Two books, all genres. Roll.
The pressure. So, my favorite book of all time is a toss-up between The God of Small Things by Arundhati Roy, which won the Booker Prize, I think, in 1998, and The Time Traveler's Wife by Audrey Niffenegger. And then for nonfiction, I'm actually reading a book right now called H is for Hawk by the British academic Helen MacDonald. And it's about she gets a goshawk, maybe I didn't pronounce that right, but anyway, a goshawk named Mabel, who she trains. She's been interested in falconry her whole life. And part of the sort of subsequent narrative with that is that Helen's father dies at the beginning of the book, and she's working through her grief, and she's training the hawk as a way of working through her grief. And it's really quite lovely and quite interesting. I know nothing about falconry, so I'm learning a lot as I go through it.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda LaDuke, thank you so much for joining
yes,
us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real honor.
Yay! All right. Are we going to go to another song?
Sure, I can do that. Oh, who are we going to go with? Who are we going to go with?
I don't know.
Now I have to pick a song.
Owen Pallett's playing.
That's right. Owen Pallett is playing a show somewhere near
might
here.
Might want to play an Owen Pallett song. I don't want to go out on a limb here.
Whoa.
Take over your DJing skills, promoting something. But if I was trying to sell tickets to Owen Pallett, I'd probably have a new Owen Pallett.
Okay,
song.
Buddy. Yeah. Okay, bud. I'm gonna play The Passions by Owen Pallett from his 2014 alternative album.
That sounds awesome.
Here it comes.
Compose. see as we try to get it on in bed. You've given me your home and head. You put on the queen's head.
Maestro over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stop the music. When the song's over, I press stop.
That's your gig, eh?
That's my. Well, I thought you were going to kill it.
No, I have no. Once I give you the chord to play from your laptop,
it's
I
up
hate
to me.
I hate to ruin the magic of radio here at the station, but once you have the chord, sir, I am no longer
tethered. Because people out there listening are like, wow, the music during this show has been amazing.
Right.
How did that happen?
Don't know. Must be the cord.
Must be.
Yeah. I will never have the cord. I'm not interested in having the cord. Too much pressure to have the cord. Don't want the cord.
All right.
Okay, so we got 15 minutes left in the cold.
Yeah, we're going to do a handful of little event rundowns of Winterfest and non-Winterfest fantastic that is happening in our city. So take it away.
So tonight, there is an event at the AGH called The Arty Crowd Runs Things, Black mm-hmm. Artists in Hamilton. And it's featuring Jojo Chinto and Sarah Sudi. Now, for me, Jojo Chinto, he was a City TV journalist for a very long time.
He was
time.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he was an amazing journalist. I remember as a kid watching Jojo Chinto on City TV. And so I was so pleased to see that he... that he's here doing this event. He's an award-winning television journalist who worked as a feature and documentary reporter for City TV in Toronto until 2009-2010. But this event, it's going to feature a screening of Leon Robinson's film. And basically, when television journalist and documentary reporter Jojo Chinto interviewed four black artists in Hamilton for the Building Cultural Legacies Project. His long-form interview with graffiti and multidisciplinary artist Leon Robinson will be screened, followed by a conversation between himself and emerging Hamilton artist and activist Sarah Sudi on the issue of representation and community building in the city. And that happens at 6:30 tonight. And then at 7:30, they have a storytelling and zine-making event workshop, and it's going to be basically they're going to be combining their skills in storytelling and zine making and sharing their insights and experiences with Hamilton. Chinto and Sudi will engage the participants in critical questions while activating the personal and political medium of zines. For those of you who don't know, a zine is a self-published magazine. Mm-hmm. Just like write it up, go with your Sharpie, photocopy it,
that
staple
thing.
It
yeah.
all together, fold it up, and you sell that baby for $2, give them out for free, do whatever you want to do with it. This is a free event that happens at the AGH tonight.
Cool.
So that's an amazing thing. Actually, I didn't realize that both two of my events are at the AGH.
There you go.
Tomorrow, Saturday at 2 p.m. Do you know about Zulu Presents?
I do.
Yeah, something
Donna
else.
Donna Avery and...
Chem, Zafir.
Yes.
They do some beautiful work. It's a new music organization, I would say. And they do the Something Else Musical Festival once a year. Gunnar is looking at me so confused.
No, I'm with you.
Okay, good.
I was
That's his thinking face.
That was my thinking face. Like, how come I wasn't connecting that to something else?
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay. Well, they have a new, they call it the New Composite Art Series called Watch It Burn. And so basically what they're doing is they're bringing film –
right.
Together with performance and music. So tomorrow at 2 p.m. for the, they're calling it Early Snow. It's opening for Michael Snow's show at the AGA. It's a retrospective from 1947 to 1962. So they're bringing CCMC, which is Canadian Creative Music Collective.
One of the most mesmerizing performances I've ever seen.
Well, you can see them tomorrow.
They're outrageous. Outrageous.
Yeah, amazing. And if I understand this correctly, it is Michael Snow, who I think is in his 90s, will be performing. Vocalist Paul Dutton, John Oswald, and percussionist John Chemevier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is going to be happening. There's a performance by FNOR, which is a performance art collective in Hamilton, and then a film by John Oswald, who is known as an avant-garde composer, musician, dancer. And so, yeah, and the piece that they'll be showing is a musical homage to Michael Snow's great silent film, So Is This. So again, this is going to be a free event that happens tomorrow at 2 o'clock at the AGH Pavilion.
I was privileged enough to have Becky Katz hook me up with CCMC for a concert at the Live Lab a couple of years ago. And for musicians who are, I'd say they're 65 to 90 age group.
Amazing.
The power. Like, Paul Dutton's vocal work is... it hits you like a train. Like, it's amazing. And there's no way I could describe what they do that would be in any way a representation of their work. Like, it's something you simply need to experience. Like, it's out of this world.
And totally, I also think that the amazing thing about seeing more advanced artists is that, like, I'm like, that's what I want to do when I'm 90 years old. Like, bring that to me. Like, I'm going to, 90-year-old Lisa.
And for, someone who's into the world of, improv and that stuff, and you see Paul Dutton, you're like, wow, that guy's double my age and is not filtering himself in any way. Like, just the freedom that he still has is incredible and really incredible to watch.
Amazing.
I'll plug Friendship Fridays, part of the Barton First Fridays event. So this is their Winterfest event. It's on tonight, starts at 5, goes well into the dark because they've got campfires where you can roast marshmallows. They've taken if you've seen it on Barton Street, which is where our office is, they have like a little shipping container outside St. Matthew's House that was painted up by co-design, a really beautiful mirror on the outside of it that's been a pop-up for a number of women who were starting small businesses. They're taking over that and turning it into a little pop-up cafe, so there's free hot chocolate and stuff like that being served out of there. They're doing inside stuff. If you're getting too cold, you can go inside and start making some Valentine's Day cards with some artists there. So it's a really, I love what Rachel's doing down on the Barton Street BIA, because she's really focusing on building relationships. And not worrying about trying to be the next super crawl or something. Just build relationships with your neighborhood, and that's where the strength is going to come from. So this tonight's their Friendship Friday. So pop on down to the Barton Street BIA and meet your neighbors. Have some hot chocolate.
Amazing.
Roast a marshmallow. Yeah.
February 12th, which is next Wednesday, also has Time and Place. Time and Place was a zine created by Ed Shaw and Jeff Griffiths. They edited it, and they had a whole bunch of guest writers be a part of it. And it's going to be the final edition of that zine. So what they would do is they would print that zine, and then they would have a performance where people would read from the zine. Next Wednesday at the Staircase, it's going to be their final. They're calling it The Last Goodbye, and it's $10 at the door, starts at 8 p.m.
Nice. And then my final Winterfest plug for the day, I promise. Beasley Winterfest, which I think is probably coordinated by Matt Thompson, if I know myself well, or know the Beasley neighborhood well. Matt's been like a community organizer in that neighborhood for so long. And this is another one of those like truly legit neighborhood events. So it's in Beasley Park, starts at 2 o'clock. They've got a little campfire. There's live music. There's games, hot chocolate, street hockey, outdoor campfire, all sorts of fun stuff. And again, just another one of those events that's just focused on building like real legitimate neighborly connections. So go out into Beasley Park, meet your neighbors, the canteen will be there, and you can play air hockey, have some hot chocolate, and just have a good time.
That sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that you said that that would be the last Winterfest thing. But
from
that's
me.
From you. However, me. So yesterday I saw Lori Lamar from the Hamilton Aerial Group. I understand that she was on the show last week, I think.
Yeah, she was.
So,
she scared me.
And she... And so I heard that you were invited to be part of the Hamilton Aerial Group.
No, I am so out of shape.
Honorary member.
I am terrified.
You could like pose and stuff. Like,
oh,
not,
sure,
you don't
buddy.
Have to get up on the
you
silks.
Could also be a puppet.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You are a Diamond Award winning clown.
I know that.
There
but,
you go.
But at least that she was describing what they go through. And
I know.
And I'm like, are you kidding me?
I know.
I'm afraid for everyone's safety in this.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
They do beautiful, beautiful work. And I just wanted to sort of remind people that that was happening from February 12th to the 15th. We were talking, you know, how we started with Amanda talking about books. And this piece is based on the book Falling Into Place by the award-winning Hamilton author John Terpstra.
Yeah.
And she, as we were talking, she was just talking about how much she has such a reverence for the natural world and the history in and around the Hamilton Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, like, I just wanted to remind people about that.
Fantastic.
And I'm going to finish off with February 21st. I like to kind of go, like, right up to the day that we're going to be back. You know what I mean?
Sure.
See, look at you. Thinking, you're, right?
Yeah. Look at that.
I'm thinking.
It's like we know when we're doing this again.
Exactly. 4 days before my 48th birthday, friends. Anyhow, February 21st, it's called We the Nordic, and it's an event happening at the Cotton Factory, and it's musical performances, live cooking demos, and food. Food. Evening cocktail. Blah, blah, blah. The evening's cocktail. I can't say this.
Cocktail?
No, this
cocktail.
This is possibly my favorite part of the show right now.
Okay, I'm just going to go back. So basically, there's going to be food. And it's going to be cocktails. Cockatoos. Okay, enough. Prepared by Hamilton star chef Johnny Blonde in collaboration with restaurateur Tina Truman from the Salt Restaurant in Estonia. And it's going to be featuring, again, the Hamilton Aerial Group, our friend Torlu Kasik-Foss,
nice.
Laulu Linud Helmi and Merica Hess, Normand Reintam, who's a pianist, and Paul Lillikas, who's the winner of Chopped Canada and a City Line chef.
Atta girl.
Woohoo!
You had trouble with cocktail,
I couldn't. Well, I practiced those things. I didn't practice saying cocktail.
You didn't need to practice cocktail?
I was just like, oh, everybody could say that word. Clearly not. So anyhow, I just want to wish everybody a great 2 weeks and have some fun wintering and festing and arting and all that stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Join us tonight down at the waterfront for Graham Chittenden, if you like, Graham Chittenden's comedy night with the folks at Levity. And I want to go off on one little quick note. This past weekend we had Frostbites, so I want to congratulate all the artists and the organizers from Frostbites. Really fantastic effort on all their friends and all the kids from Alert. I say kids, they're like 20, they're not kids. But I wanted to note that Claire Calnan, every night they had an Indigenous artist there who was performing and sharing insights into their ceremonies and their songs, which was brilliant. But I would say that Claire Calnan gave one of the most authentic land acknowledgements I've heard in a long time. So kudos to you, Claire, for stepping up and doing that right, and continue encouraging others to do the same. We will go out on a track from Woodhands, because I heard dude from Woodhands, who I was chatting with months and months ago, on the radio the other day, because he's like an epidemiologist, is that right?
Oh.
Like, he's like, so he's been on the radio a lot talking about like all these crazy infectious diseases and stuff. So it's amazing to hear someone who in my 20s I was like, they are amazing musicians, and now he's like a world class epidemiologist.
Crazy.
Good job, dude. Yeah. We'll go with Into the Woods from Woodhands off their 2008 album Heart Attack. Here it comes. We'll be right back.